First verse in English.
Valichar apcho be'avdecho. Ki chomocho kefaro. Now, the nature of Yehuda's speech, if we go through it, on the surface, it sounds like an apologetic, like a soft apologetic speech, like, please, please do something beyond the call of duty. Rashi says that it wasn't that way at all. And all along, throughout the speech, there are small hints that can very easily, from the hints, it can be deduced that Yosef was actually threatening Pharaoh. That the nature of the speech was, it was soft from the outside. That Yehuda's speech was soft on the outside, but it was very tough on the inside. Let me give you an example. Rashi brings down Valich, the second Rashi. Valichar apcho mikanato lomit shediber alof koshos. From here you see, if Yosef has to say, I'm telling you, don't be angry, which means what I'm going to tell you has, you know, there are many reasons that you should be angry, but control your anger. In other words, from here we learn out that besides what we see on the surface, which is a very soft-spoken speech, there is a tremendous amount of toughness. That's what Rashi says. And if you take a look in the next Rashi, Mikomocho Kefaro, a simple statement. Because you are like Paro. So on the surface, it sounds like you are very important to me. You are just like Pharaoh to me. In other words, on the surface, it sounds like very soft-spoken, very respectable. Rashi says, Umidrosho, but behind the surface pshat, Yehuda made sure that Yosef understood through so many hints that it's really a threat. Like, for instance, Soifcho lilkoisolo betzoras. Be careful. You know what your ancestor Pharaoh, what happened to him when he started up with Abraham? He ended up being a leper. That's exactly what may start happen to you, because we are descendants of that Abraham. In other words, it's an implied threat. A second threat, says Rashi. You should know that we consider you a liar. You hear? You are just like Pharaoh. You're a liar. How? When you said we should bring our youngest brother, you said, I'll just look at him and I'll let him go. So, did you fulfill your word? And another pshat, says Rashi, if you don't do the right thing, I'll kill you and Pharaoh. In other words, Rashi is telling us, it's not just in this pasuk. Just Rashi is establishing, it's telling you the nature of the speech. It's a speech that sounds very respectable, very apologetic, but inside there are tremendous threats. Now, in Sefer Al-Shir, he asks like this, why is it that in last week's parsha, in the last few psukim of last week's parsha, when they find the cup by Binyamin, and in Posuk Tesvov of last week's parsha, the last three psuki, Maftir, Vayomer Lem Yosef, Mo Amayse Azeh Asher Asisem, what is it that you did? Look, no, you took my cup, the cup that's so important to me. So in Pasuk 16 says, Yehuda Vayimer Yudo, Man Noimar Ladoini, Man Edaber, Man Itzdado. Man Noimar, Man Edaber, there is nothing for me to say, which means I'm not going to say anything. I'm ready to accept the verdict. What is the verdict? Elokim Motso Savon Avodecho, Hinenu Avodim Ladoini. We are all servants to you. Gama Nachnu, Gama Sherim Tzoto Via Biodoi. We are all servants to you. Meaning, we are ready to accept your verdict. Says Yosef in Pasuk 17, Vayomer, says Yosef, Cholilali, how can you expect me to do something so unjust? Ho isha asher nimtzo gavio beyodoi, hu yeli leovet. I'm only going to take the one who is guilty. Why should I take the innocent ones besides the guilty one? Binyamin I'm going to take, and the rest of you are all free. Vatem alu l'shalom elavichem. Vaigash elav Yehuda. So Yehuda says, no, now we are coming to a confrontation. That I'm not ready to accept. Either we are all servants, or if not, I'm confronting you. If you take only Binyamin, we don't accept it. Now, why couldn't there be a Vayigash Elov Yehuda right when he thought that they were all going to be servants? Now, the same Vayigash Elov Yehuda that Yehuda is doing because he's taking Binyamin, right? He should have done if he's taking Binyamin plus everybody else. You hear the Alshech's kasha? It's a tremendous discussion. And you can't say that Yehuda would have said the same thing, because you see in Pasuk Tezayin that Yehuda says, man noimar man edaber, which means, it's true, I'm not ready to say anything. I accept your verdict. So comes out that something changed Yehuda's mind once he took Binyamin only. What changed his mind? What happened? Says the Alshech like this. He says that if you are in a very high madrega, you are able to see a certain situation. Right? Something that happened to you. Something bad that happens to you. Does it fit or doesn't it fit with how the pattern of your life should be? You hear? If it fits, you accept it. If it doesn't fit, that means it's a test and you should go on a confrontation and try to uproot it. What does it mean, fitting? Fitting means mido keneged mido. In other words, if something bad happens to me and I'm able to connect it to something that I did, then it fits. For instance, in this particular case, as long as they are all taken as servants, does that fit the crime? Almost completely. Why? 10 out of these 11 brothers sold Yosef with different degrees of responsibility, but they are all in one way or another responsible. The only one who is completely not responsible is whom?
Binyamin.
The one who is completely, he wasn't even around. I mean, even Reuben, you can say, if he would have showed more leadership, they wouldn't have sold him Yehuda. I mean, they're all responsible in one way or another. One who is absolutely not responsible for the sale of Yosef is Binyamin. But that doesn't bother us, that Binyamin should also be locked up with everybody else. Why? Because there is a rule that if the majority is guilty, the innocent minority will suffer because of the guilty majority. We find that concept, right? I mean, even Avraham Avinu recognized that it's not unjust that Sodom should be destroyed if there are less than 10 tzaddikim, right? Meaning, there is a point where the crime is so great that it overweighs the righteousness of a few tzaddikim. Maybe if there would be more tzaddikim, it can overweigh it. So that he can understand. That Binyamin should be locked up with the other 10 brothers, he can understand because of Oilo Rosho. There's a statement in the Gemara. Oilo Rosho, it's bad for the Rosho. Oili Shcheinoi. If you are the neighbor of an evil person, you'll suffer too. So Binyamin is suffering by association. Okay? But it fits. The punishment fits the crime. As long as the punishment fits the crime, we can't confront anybody. We have to accept it. But when Yosef said, no, I'm only going to take Binyamin and all of you can go free, that is a complete contradiction to Mido Keneged Mido. Binyamin is the only innocent one, so he should be the one that's punished. And they who are all guilty should go free. That's impossible. Therefore, if it's not Mido Keneged Mido, then it's only a test. And since it's a test, then we have to fight it. This is why Vayigash Elov Yehuda is only after it's Binyamin who is going to be locked up and everybody else is going to go free. This is how the Alshech understands this idea of Vayigash Elov Yehuda. And why is he ready to fight Yosef? Why isn't he afraid? Because he figures it's only a test to see whether he's going to be strong or not, and that's why he does it. Now, there's an interesting pshat here in this posuk, Yud Ches. The Kicho Mocho Kefaro, besides what Rashi says, there's another pshat in Kicho Mocho Kefaro, in a simple, in a very simple pshat, kikomocho befaro, because what Rashi calls zepshuto, if you take a look, choshuvato beinai kemelech, what did Yehuda mean? You are like Pharaoh. As far as what is concerned, we mean in the simple pshat. So, it says in the Meforshim that really, Yehuda's request doesn't make sense according to any normal structure of law. For instance, how can you say to someone, if I commit a crime, someone else should go in my stead to jail? How does it make sense? The one who commits the crime has to go to jail. Except if you live in a if you live in an absolute monarchy, the rules, what the king rules, is completely outside of the realm of the structure of justice in this country, in the country, right? That's what he meant to say. I'm requesting from you that you should accept me instead of Binyamin. You know why? Because you are not bound by the laws. You make the laws. Kikomocho kefaro. This is how the Meforshim learn in the simple, in the pshat of kikomocho kefaro. Now, we'll continue in the speech of Yehuda. In Posuk Chof, Vanomer El Adoni, Yesh Lonu Ov Zokein, V'yelet Zekunim Koton, Ve'ochiv Meis, Vayvoser Hu Levado, and he remained alone, Vayvoser Hu Levadoi. Hear the statement. He remained alone, Le'imoy, to his mother. Right? Now, it's interesting that in Parshas Vayishlach, in chapter 32, Lamed Beit, Posuk Chof Hei, it says like this. That's the story with the fight of Yaakov with the Sora Shalesa, with the angel of Esau. Vayivoser Yaakov levadoi, and Yaakov remained alone. You remember, he went on the other side of the river. Now, is the statement coincidental? Vayivoser Yaakov levadoi, and Vayivoser hu levadoi? The similarity of the expression gives us a hint to the fact that there is a connection here. Now the question is, what is the connection between the two? And if you take a look in the Bal Haturim, here in Vayigash, Vayvoser, it says like this. Where do we find this statement, Vayvoser hu levadoi? Says the Bal Haturim, Hocho beis b'mesoro. Such an expression, says the Bal Haturim, doesn't appear anywhere in Tanakh, except in two places. Vayvoser Yaakov levadoi, Vayvoser hu levadoi. Now, what is the meaning behind that statement of the Bal Haturim, that there is a connection between Vayvoser Yaakov levadoi and Vayvoser hu levadoi? So, I mentioned this in the past, that the only one of the children of Yaakov who is the real descendant of Yaakov was Binyamin. The only levado, the only one that it's possible, in that's what Yaakov thought, that he can remain alone. Meaning, ideally, all the 12 tribes should survive. But if anything is going to happen to any one of the other tribes, there is still a future to my descendant. Who is the one that if something happens to him, that's the end of the Jewish people? Binyamin, you see? You see that when the 10 brothers are going to Egypt, Yaakov says, okay, you have to go, go. But Binyamin, oh no. Why not? Because if something happens to Binyamin, then the future of Yaakov's descendants is in danger. If something happens to any other tribe, it's terrible. But it's not the end of the descendancy of the Jewish people. That's what it means, right? Yaakov is saying, Shemi Krenos, no, Binyamin I can't let go. Maybe something will happen to it. Maybe something will happen to the other tribes. So what's implied in it? That if something happens to Binyamin, then that's the end of me. And he says it. I'm ending up in Sheol. I'm going to end up in... that will be the end of me. Sheol means the end. Now, why is it this way? So, we once explained, I told you, that Rachel is the only real zivug of Yaakov. The only real zivug, right, the real pair of Yaakov is Rachel. I told you of the two sons, right, Yosef and Binyamin. So, this is simple. That right now Yaakov thinks that Yosef is dead. If Yosef is dead, then the only one is Binyamin. But there's even more. I once told you that Marsha says that even Yosef was transferred. Remember I told you that Yosef was transferred from the womb of Leah to the womb of Rachel? That originally he was in the womb of... Remember that is a Chazal that says that when Rachel became pregnant the first time in her womb, she got pregnant with a girl. Chazal said. So Leah, who had Ruach HaKodesh, she had prophetic intuition. She realized she's pregnant with a girl, so she prayed to God that whoever is in the womb of Rachel should be transferred to her, so that at least Rachel will have two sons left, because if she's going to have a girl and Leah is going to have a boy, then she's going to have seven sons. Each one of the maids is going to have two, right? So it's only how many are left for Rachel? Only one. They knew that there's going to be 12 tribes. So therefore she prayed that there should be a transfer in the womb. Says the Marsha, what does it mean? Yosef, who was in the womb of Leah, went over to Rachel. And Dinah, who was in the womb of Rachel, went over to Leah. You hear the statement? Comes out that Yosef drew some of his characteristics from Leah. And Leah was the zivug of Esau. So the leadership qualities of Yosef stem from his Leah side. Right? Remember, Rachel and Yaakov, that zivug is the zivug of Yaakov, Ish, Tom, Yosef, Oholim. The perfectly pure Yaakov who is only involved with spiritual matters. So the only quintessential Yaakov is Binyamin. This is why, Vayvoser Yaakov Levadoi, Vayvoser Hu Levadoi. And this is the reason why, who is the only tribe throughout Jewish history that has the courage to say, I don't care, I'm going to fight everybody else, because I can survive alone. I don't need any other tribe. Which is the tribe that secedes from the Jewish nation and goes to war? Binyamin. Pileges Begibo. In Pileges Begibo, right, in Shoftim, at the end of Shoftim, we find that the tribe of Binyamin decides to go it alone against all the other tribes. All the other tribes, remember in the story of, we won't go into it, that they wanted somebody to be brought to trial. And Shevet Binyamin says, you won't tell me what to do. We will make our own decisions. And they said, if you don't, we'll go to war. And Binyamin said, okay, we'll go to war. Because Binyamin feels levadoi. Binyamin can survive levadoi. The only thing is that Binyamin, whatever he doesn't fulfill, he has a guarantor. Who is the guarantor of Binyamin? Yehuda. The guarantor is Yehuda. This relationship of Binyamin and his guarantor repeats itself in future history. What is the idea of a guarantor, somebody who guarantees your loan? If you don't pay up, if you don't do your job, the guarantor will do it, right? That's the relationship that's being established right now. Binyamin is Binyamin, and Yehuda has to cover for him. That's the idea. He's the backup system. Listen to this. Who is the one? You know that we have a kapole. That the moment Amalek is going to be uprooted, then the throne of God is automatically being rebuilt. And the throne of God being rebuilt means Mashiach. Where does it say that? Parshas Beshalach, when the Jews fight Amalek, it says, Ki yod al keis ko. The throne of God is described in Parshas Beshalach in the first encounter with Amalek. How do we spell it? Chof Samach. How do you spell, what is the real word? Kisei. The word is Kisei. And the word, and in Beshalach it says, Al Kase. What's missing? The Aleph. The idea of the unity. As long as Amalek is around, the throne of God is not a Kisei yet. It's not full. As soon as we destroy Amalek, the Kisei will be finished, and that will be the redemption. Who was the first one who was given the job to finish up the throne of God, to destroy Amalek? Sholamelech. Which tribe is he from?
Binyamin.
Comes out that Sholamelech, representing Binyamin, is given the job of fulfilling the destiny of the Jewish people, wiping out Amalek. What happens with Shaul? He fails. What happens when he fails? He loses his Malchus. Who is the backup system for Binyamin?
Yehuda.
Yehuda, David. Comes out that the whole relationship between Shaul and David is the relationship of Binyamin and Yehuda, which is, if you don't do your job, then the backup system will come into the field, okay? Now, except for one problem. If the one that's supposed to do it will do it, in other words, Binyamin, then the process of redemption is painless. There's no pain. Right away, he wipes up at Amalek, that's redemption. But when the backup system comes in, that's a very painful system. Why? Binyamin is the only one who never bowed down to Esau. Remember in the first encounter. Right? He never bowed down. Why not? He wasn't born yet. So therefore it establishes the fact that Binyamin can fight Amalek without any subservience. He doesn't need any subservience. Chazal say that the reason why everybody bowed down to Haman except Mordechai. Why didn't Mordechai bow down to Haman? Because I'm from Binyamin. Binyamin doesn't have to bow down to Haman. So you find this idea that Binyamin can oppose Amalek without having to go through the subservience period. Everybody else, if he wants to overcome Amalek, has to first be subservient to him. Because that's what the relationship was to from all the brothers towards Esau. That requires a golus. The moment David HaMelech takes over the job from Shaul, he can't fulfill it right away. He has to go through a long golus and a subservience to Esau, and only at the end can he overcome Amalek. But that backup system is exactly the system that's being established right now. The quintessential Jew is Binyamin. The backup system is Yehuda. Theoretically, even if all the rest of the Jewish people disappear, Binyamin and Yehuda will always survive. What happened in Jewish history?
That's the tribe disappeared.
And who survived?
Binyamin and Yehuda.
Binyamin and Yehuda, because that's the quintessential Jew. And say, notice, this is this idea of the essence levadoi, vaivoser hu levadoi, with a backup system, which is Binyamin and Yehuda, remains in Jewish history until the end of days. That is the system that will bring the Mashiach. Binyamin and Yehuda. Okay.
How do we know Binyamin survived also?
So what do you mean? The southern tribes? Who were the southern tribes? We call it Yehuda because the area was called Yehuda, but who are the southern two tribes?
Yehuda and Binyamin.
Exactly. I mean, those are the tribes that survived. Right. Because those are the tribes that have to survive. I mean, the essence of Klal Yisrael is Vaivoser Hu Levadoi with a backup system. That's what's being established right now.
When you say the backup, is Yehuda what Esau originally was supposed to be?
Of course. That's the idea. If you take a look, even for instance, when Rashi brings down why Yehuda says, "Why am I better than Binyamin?" So one of these Rashi says, I can serve better, I'm stronger, I'm better in war. Oh, here it is. In Posuk Lamed Gimel. When it's in the Posuk, it says, Vato yeshev no avdecho tachasanar. I should be tachasanar instead of him. Eved ladoini. Says Rashi, yeshev no avdecho lechol dovor ani meule mimenu. I'm better than him in everything. Ligvuro, strength.
right?
Lemilchomo, war, uleshamesh, right? We are talking about all Esav characteristics. Gvuro, milchomo, leshamesh. Because you remember, what did Yaakov buy up from Esav with the lentils? What does Rashi say? Avoido, shimush. Now, shimush, in the Beis HaMikdash. Shimush means serving in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, the idea was that Esav was supposed to do all physical actions. Everything physical was part of what Esav is supposed to do, including serving in the Beis HaMikdash. It's incredible. Right? Chazal say, the reason why Yaakov tricked him with the lentils, or didn't trick him, I mean, why? He made a deal with him because he said, I can't accept that this Esav should be the one serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Which means that the original plan was, Esav is supposed to do all physical acts, including serving in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what Yehuda. In other words, Yehuda is the leader of all those characteristics. He's the leader. He's the Malch. He's Malchus. Okay? So, he represents all the Esav characteristics. Now,
it was that shot that we gave before when he said, what are we going to gain by this? By the sale? He's taking up the Esav characteristics on himself.
Again?
He said the shot we were talking before with Yehuda when he says, what are we going to gain by the sale? Let's take him out of it and sell him. He's saying, yes, we're going to take the Esav role onto myself.
Like, said, the ace of role from Yosef
that Yosef was supposed to have.
We'll take it on ourselves, right? That's it, yeah.
So that shows that, like, Yehuda here also has that idea to have the physical support here.
Right. Ma betza, you know, that's the idea. I told you that, what he said about the shoes. It was when Yehuda says, let's at least gain some money for the sale of Yosef, because the service doesn't make a lot of sense. You know that Yehuda says, ma betza ki narog ezachinu, what money are we going to make? The word betza means money, right? Remember when they were going to leave him in the pit, so he says, yes, but if we leave him in the pit, we don't make any money. Let's sell him, and then at least we're going to make some money. Well, the service doesn't make any sense. Well, he wants money. So the Midrash says it doesn't mean money. It means money to buy shoes. So therefore, what do we gain, right? And then it says, you know, in the prayers of Yom Kippur, in the Asorah Harugei Malchus, right, there's a long Slichas and Musaf in Yom Kippur, it says like this, that whoever it was, the Roman officer or general who decided to kill the Jewish sages, what did he accuse him for? Of, you see, your ancestors sold Joseph for a pair of shoes. You see that the idea was to buy a pair of shoes. So the idea is, what's the idea that Yehuda wanted? Let's buy a pair of shoes. What is the symbolism? Obviously there is a symbolism here. It's not that they really wanted a pair of shoes. Shoes always represent, I told you the Malbim says in Rus, the shoes always represents the shoe in relation with the body has the same relationship as the body with the soul. In other words, what purpose does a shoe, have? That you are too sensitive to step on the ground, the stones are too rough, it's too dirty, right? So for the body to be on the earth, to have a contact with this earth, you need something to separate it, to make it possible for you to survive on this earth. So you have to put on a shoe. In relation to the soul, how can the soul that's so pure come down to this physical world? It needs a shoe. What is the shoe of the soul? The body. The Malbim says it concerning why, by chalitze, when a person refuses to make the levirate marriage, yibum, the woman takes off the shoe of the brother who refuses to marry her. Why? Because you know that the soul of the dead brother craves to remain in this world. How? By the fact that his brother will marry his wife, his soul will be transferred to his child. So his soul will keep his shoes on. You hear how the Malbim learns. So therefore, if the brother refuses to marry his wife, you are refusing to let my husband keep the shoes on, so take off your shoe. That's how the Malbim understands the idea of chalitze. Now, the idea then of the shoe always means the physical. Moshe, when he's approaching the burning bush, take off your shoes because it's a holy place, which means in your contact with God, you have to take off your shoe, take off your physical nature. Right? That's the symbolism of the shoe. So, the truth of the matter is that Esav is the shoe of Yaakov. Why? Because Yaakov, in the original idea of Yitzchak, is the pure soul who only sits and learns Torah. Right? Who will take care of his daily needs? Who will bring him food? Who will defend him? Esav. Esav will be the one that will be the shoe of Yaakov. Now, Yosef is the one that becomes the shoe of the Jewish people, the one who provides the food, right? So, the point was, since Yosef has Esav characteristics, as we said, and that's what he uses when he comes to Mitzrayim. So Yehuda says, so who will take care of the physical needs of the Jews? Yosef has a big job of taking care of the physical needs of the Jews. So Yosef said, let's sell him and we'll buy a pair of shoes. And that will symbolize the fact that we will take care of our own needs without needing Yosef. Yehuda said, we will take the shoes. We'll get from Yosef the money to buy the shoes. And in other words, we'll take over the job that Yosef is supposed to do. In other words, Yosef, they thought, was the one that is the Esau of their generation. The same way that Esau was supposed to be the shoe of Yaakov, who is our shoe? Yosef. He's the Esav. So let's get rid of him and keep the shoe. Notice, by keeping the shoe, they are doing the same act that Rivka did by tricking Esav from the brachas. Right? That was Yehuda's idea. Now, let's go in a little bit. In Pasuk Mem Hei, ve'lo yochol Yosef lihisapeik lechol anitzovim olo. And Yosef couldn't control himself, so he told everybody to leave. And he says to them, va'item eskolo b'chi, cries, and he says to them, in Pasuk Gimel, va'imar Yosef lechol, ani Yosef, ha'oit ovichoi, is my father still alive? Everybody asked the question, didn't he know that his father was still alive? That was part of every conversation that he had with the brothers. The father will feel badly, he will suffer. I mean, he knew that the father was alive. Why all of a sudden does he say, ha'oit ovichoi? That's one question that's asked. And the other question that's asked is in the Gemore, Chagige, Dav Daled Omed Beis. It says the following statement. Rabbi Leozer. Kimoti lehai kro, when Rabbi Elazar used to read this posuk, the following posuk, bochi, he used to cry every time. Ve'lo yochlu echov lanoi soy soy, and the brothers weren't able to answer him, ki nivhalu mipono, because they were confused by what he said. Right? So Rabbi Elazar used to say, uma toichocho, if a rebuke of a human being, in other words, Yosef's rebuke to the brothers caused them that they couldn't answer, kach toichocho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu alach haskamo bekamo, so for sure, in the day of judgment, when God will rebuke us, for sure we won't be able to answer. Imagine, if the brothers weren't able to answer Joseph, for sure we won't be able to answer God. So the Beis HaLevi said, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. They were working about it. They couldn't answer him because of fear. I mean, shock. What does that have to do with the day of judgment? Second of all, where do you see in the statement of Yosef any rebuke? There is no tochocho, there is no rebuke. You just ask them, how is our father still alive? Where is there any rebuke? Says the Beis HaLevi, a beautiful pshat, he says like this. In reality, Yosef's question wasn't a real question, it was a rhetorical question. Ha'oid obichoi, is our father still alive? What it really means is, listen, all of a sudden now, when I want to keep Binyamin, what is the main concern? Our father? Our father will suffer? Our father is his only child with his favorite wife? How can you do it to our father? And when you sold me, did that thought cross your mind? In other words, you are being inconsistent with yourself. Your great concern for our father now, what happened to it many years ago when I was being sold? How come that wasn't your concern? In other words, that was a rebuke. You know, the statement, ha'oi dovi choi, wasn't just a question. It was a rhetorical question that brought out the fact that they are inconsistent in what they were doing. So he says like this. That's what Rabbi Eliezer means. In the day of judgment, God will never ask us why we didn't do this, why we didn't do that. Because we probably have perfect answers for everything. Why didn't you learn this and this amount? Well, it was too difficult. So God will never ask that, he says. God will always compare your own actions with each other. For instance, you say, why couldn't you learn a few hours a day? Well, yeah, I mean, I can't concentrate for a few hours a day. So why could you concentrate reading the novel for those hours a day? Meaning, not that God will tell you is it right or wrong, but how come you are inconsistent with yourself? God will tell you, will ask you, God won't ask you, why didn't you give charity? Because you can answer, well, I didn't have enough money for that. I had so many other things. But God will ask you, so when somebody asked you for charity, you said, no, for that I don't have money. But at the same time, you were wasting money somewhere else, buying some things that you don't even need. Meaning, your own inconsistency will be the reason why God will punish you in the day of judgment. That's called toichocho. The word toichocho is related to the Hebrew word noichach, which means God will put us in front of a mirror of our own actions and show us our own inconsistencies within our own actions. This is exactly what Rabbi Eliezer says. If the brothers couldn't answer it, in other words, the brothers realized the inconsistencies of themselves when they sold Yosef, so Kol Shekin we, in the day of judgment, God will point out the inconsistencies of our own lives. What will we be able to answer when God will do that? So that's why he used to cry about his own inconsistencies. So according to this, we can understand. It's interesting the word used, v'lo yochlu echov lanoisoisoi, the brothers couldn't answer him, ki nivhalu mipono. It's interesting, it doesn't say pochadu mipono, fear. Nivhalu means the confusion that comes from the fact that I'm inconsistent, I can't answer. What can I answer? Meaning, I can give you a good answer if you just ask me simply. Why didn't I do that? So I can give you a good answer. But when you point out my own inconsistency, then I'm in beholo. I'm in a state of confusion. Okay,
let's stop here. He was originally inside Leia, but he was transferred to Rahab.
Which?
Do you know
Squish?
In there?
Yeah.
Benjamin?
Asa?
Leia knew that...
Well, I mean, so